What if Jesus had never been born? From this book by Dr. James, the former Dr. James Kennedy, now with the Lord, so he knows the truth. Back to the Future. Remember that movie series, Back to the Future? Specifically, Back to the Future 2. Marty there up in the left-hand corner, played by Michael J. Fox. You know, in the first movie, if you know about this, he's in 1985, and he gets back to 1955, and then when he's in 1955, he has to get back to 1985, back to the future. At the end of that first movie, though, he's back in 1985. Then he goes forward, I think 30 years, 2015. While he's there, he picks up this almanac from 1950 to 2000. And then he goes back to, no, while he's in the future, it gets confusing. He's in the future. His arch enemy, Biff, gets a hold of the almanac, and then he goes back to 1955 and gives that almanac to his younger self, who then uses that to make a fortune. He knows of all the predictions, the horse races, who's going to win the World Series, so he makes all these bets and wins them all and makes a big fortune. And he turns in what's called the Pleasure Palace, and the course of history is changed for the worse. The Sun Valley or the Happy Valley turns into Sad Valley. So then, of course, Michael J. Fox then has to go back to 1955 and somehow retrieve the almanac before the older Biff gives it to his younger self so that the course of history will not go in that direction. So we come to Jesus Christ. If Jesus Christ had never been born, the direction of history would have been a lot worse. And because he was born, a lot of things changed, things for the better. What kind of world would we have had or have if Jesus had never been born? Probably not so great. Now, we've already seen Christianity's impact on various aspects of life. Christianity's impact on the value of human life. Life is good. I mentioned that this series would be equivalent to a course you take in school called apologetics. I think it's Paul who said, be ready to give your defense of your faith, the apologetic, not to apologize, but to give a defense of anyone who would ask. So we're to be ready to give someone some defense. We're not just going to be always on the defensive, but we need to be defensive about certain things that people have against Jesus and the church. The first thing is that we saw was that Christianity's impact on the value of life, that all life is valued from the womb to the tomb. Then we saw Christianity's impact on helping the poor. We saw Christianity's impact in caring for the sick. Then we saw Christianity's impact on human government. The fact that the Christian faith played a vital role in the development of the United States of America and has given the world a great model of good government. Last week we saw Christianity's contribution to civil and religious liberty. And today we're going to look at Christianity's impact on science and education. Now last week John told me that the sermon was kind of short, like 20 minutes. I think we're going to go a little longer today because I have two things I want to talk to you about, science and education, how Christianity has impacted those areas. First of all, modern science or modern advances in science and education is a direct result of Christianity's impact in the world. We live in the scientific and information age, right? We live in the time of automobiles and airplanes and buses and trains and transportation. Advances in science allows us to live longer and longer, thank God. All right, and we live in the information age. I got a little mini computer right here in my back pocket, right? Basically, I'm able to communicate with just about anybody in the whole world, either by various means of, texting or voice or whatever. So we live in the scientific information age. Well, how did it all come about? Well, some think that science and religion are antithetical to each other, and they're fighting with each other, and they're totally opposites, and they can't come together. Some view religion as being just about faith. Science is about fact. Religion is about revelation. Science is about evidence. Religion is inductive and science is deductive. Religion talks about God and talks about the why, whereas the science talks about, the scientist called the cosmos, the universe, the world. And it only talks about how. It doesn't discuss about why things happen. Now let's look at the origins of science. Medieval science was based on Aristotle authority and logic rather than ongoing observation and experimentation. I had to call Rev yesterday and talk to him and say, okay, what is Aristotle philosophy? I'm reading this and that and other thing about Aristotle, Plato. I couldn't figure it out what it was talking about. Even though I had a course in philosophy. And this is what I think it came up with, is that the method that he used of observation and experimentation was correct. He observed the world, and others in the Greek times observed things. Like, you know, we see the sun rising and moving across the sky. So they said, well, the sun revolves around the earth, according to their observation, right? But their observation was wrong. But they made certain conclusions based on their observation. And so throughout the early centuries, throughout the Middle Ages, people accepted that scientific explanation based on previous Aristotle thinking, right? But that thinking was incorrect. Aristotle induced certain probable conclusions based on observations and reasoning, which then became the rule, the Bible, the canon of how people understood things. Okay? So his method of in coming to certain conclusion wasn't necessarily wrong, it's just that his premises were wrong. Right? Rev, help me get all through that. You understand all that? The foundation of modern science, though, began with Oxford scholars Roger Bacon, who lived in 1214, 1294, and Robert realized that Aristotle had made certain mistakes about the makeup of the universe. Bacon stressed careful observation and systematic collection of information to unlock nature's secrets. And then he attacks slavish dependence on accepted authorities, that authorities of Aristotle. Right? So then Copernicus and others began to observe things that were different from the authority, the consensus science of the day, which was Aristotle science. Okay? So with Copernicus, it began the rise of modern science began with Copernicus and the Polish astronomer Vesalius. And you see here he lived in from 1475 to 1543. Now Galileo, the story about Galileo is all interesting. He observed the heavens with the use of a newly invented telescope, came to the conclusion that Copernicus was right and Aristotle was wrong. Galileo lived about 100 years after Copernicus. Okay? Copernicus used mathematics to determine this, and then Galileo used the telescope to basically prove what Copernicus had originally proposed. Now, Galileo's agreement was not merely with the church, but with the established science of the day. The problem arose because in the 17th century, 1600s, the church had sided with the wrong science, the wrong authority, which was the Aristotle understanding of science. So Galileo's disagreement wasn't with the Bible, it was with the church who had sided with wrong science. Right? We have the same problem today, where we have certain churches who accept theistic evolution, so they're siding with the wrong science, in my opinion. All right? The rise of modern science did not conflict with the Bible. What the Bible teaches. Indeed, at a crucial point, the scientific revolution rested upon what the Bible teaches. This is according to Francis Schaeffer on page 132. I don't want to turn some of that. Now, James Kennedy It seems to me that when I was reading it, I both read his book, and then I went back and read Francis Schaeffer's book, How Should We Then Live, which is also a film series, which would be interesting to do that. Oh, it's pretty outdated, back from the 1970s. Most of us were required to read this when we were in college. Some of the things he says about this is interesting. The rise of modern science did not conflict with the Bible teaches. Indeed, at the crucial point, scientific revolution rested on what the Bible teaches. And he continues, both Alfred Whitehead and Robert Oppenheimer, two scholars in this century, stressed that modern science was born out of the Christian worldview. Whitehead was widely respected as a mathematician, philosopher, and Oppenheimer also. And after he became the director of an Institute of Advanced Studies at Princeton in 1947, wrote on a wide range of subjects related to science, in addition to writings of his own field, structure on atomic energy. Schaeffer says that they weren't necessarily Christians, but they came to the conclusion that Christianity had a huge influence on the development and origin of science. And he says that Whitehead said that Christianity is the mother of science, in the medieval insistence on the rationality of God. In other words, he said, because of the early scientists believed that the world was created by a reasonable God, they were not surprised to discover that people could find out something true about nature and the universe and on the basis of reason. They weren't throwing reason out. They were the reason, the rational God, was the motivator for them to look into nature. The heavens and the earth have been created by God, and God is a reasonable God, just as the Bible says. Living with the concept that the world was created by a reasonable God, scientists could then move with confidence, expecting to be able to find about the world by observation and experimentation. Since the world had been created by a reasonable God, they were not surprised to find a correlation between themselves as observers and the things that they observed. Continuing on page 134, Christianity is the mother of science because it insists that God, who created the universe, has revealed himself in the Bible to be the kind of God he is. Consequently, there is a sufficient basis for science to study the universe. Right? So, Christianity's basic teaching is that there is a rational God who is the source of all truth and that this world is a rational world. Like I say, that Christianity is the mother of science, which gives us the sufficient basis of scientific study. Now, here's a couple examples of people that were living during this time that were Christians. All of these were Christian. I mean Christians like not in the capital C sense. Okay, they didn't primarily adhere to the whole faith alone, Christ alone doctrine, but they were Christians. They believed in basic Christian teachings, right? One of those was Johannes Kepler. He was the first to observe that the planets' orbits were elliptical and not circular. They weren't perfect circles, but they kind of went out like a egg-type rotation. Sir Isaac Newton observed there was a universal force of attraction, which we know now as gravity. Newton said, James Kennedy says that if Newton had others had not had a biblical base, they would have no basis for their science at all. Another individual was Blaise Pascal, invented the first barometer, and did work in the equilibrium of fluids. There was Michael Faraday, pioneered in the work of electricity. There was James Maxwell tapes, cassette tapes and 8-track tapes, and all, remember that? Pioneered in the work of electrodynamics. The Royal Society of London for the Improving of Natural Knowledge was founded in 1662. In the early days, most of them were Christians. In fact, 7 of the 10 scientists were Puritans. They were Christian and Puritans. And they were all Christians. The reformers helped pave the way to the scientific development, in many instances publishing their works. There's Luther there. You see in the statue, there's, I think that's Luther, Calvin, John Knox, and someone else. I'm not sure. All right, scientists, I might mention, were also creationists. They didn't believe in long billions and billions of years of Earth history. They believed that God, as the Bible states in Genesis chapters 1, that God created everything in 6 24-hour days. They believed in a relatively young Earth. Relatively speaking, I mean, if we think about it, 6,000 years is a long time. It's been around longer than we have, right? It's older than the hills. They say older than the hills, right? You know, the hills that were here when the first Europeans came to America, they're still here. They're the same hills and mountains, right? The Bible is, I might note, is not necessarily a scientific textbook, but when it touches on issues related to science, it always speaks with the utmost accuracy. Modern science noticed that it did not develop among the Greeks nor the Jews, nor did it develop among the Muslims. The Muslims believe in fatalism, skepticism. Yes, they believe, oh, Allah is great. Allah exists. God exists, but we can't really know much about him. They're skeptic about anything that God is, and therefore, because of that, we can't really know much about our world either. Also, modern science did not develop among animists. Animists are people who believe that there are spirits living in the earth and different plants or trees or the ground. Therefore, you don't want to go around and messing up and digging around in there. You might disrupt the spirits. So, no science there. Modern science did not develop among the Hindus and the Buddhists. Why? Because the physical world is not really even real. Why bother studying it? Doesn't exist, just the spirit world. That's all we're concerned about. So what happened to modern science? Well, modern science has become postmodern science, or as Francis Schaeffer called it, the modern science, the philosophical view existentialism. Oh, wow, that's a big word. What is that? Well, I think it'd be illustrated by the movie Forrest Gump. Remember the story about Forrest Gump? All right? Run, Forrest, run. Right? Here he is running. One day he just decides he's going to run. And he's running, he's running, he's running. All these people are following him. He's running so long, he's growing hair all along, beard. He's doing this for so long. And then one time he just stops. He stops running. Why? All these strange things throughout his life happen. For no rhyme or reason. There's no explanation. Things just happen. Right? For no reason. So that's basically existentialism. Things happen in our life. No rhyme or reason. No meaning to anything. Just happens. Now you can see the progression of what happened in the issue of art. From modern science to postmodern views. Back in the Renaissance and the Reformation time, when people saw the world with reality, with perspective. You see, there's detail in that top picture there. You have perspective and depth. Then we get into the Impressionist period where things begin to get a little foggy. Right? You know, things aren't as clear. I'm become a little skeptic here. Then we get the modern, postmodern world of Picasso there. What in the world is that? Right? It's just, which way should we turn it? You know, what is that? Not sure. That's how a lot of people view the world today. In fact, if you go down to Art Basel down in Miami, when they have the art festival down there, down in Wynwood, okay, you'll go in there. I went to it one time when we were doing a story about that. And there's all this strange, weird looking art, if they call it. I don't know. A bicycle, half a bicycle upside down on a pedestal or something. Then off to the side there was a guy playing what I guess was postmodern music. It was basically just noises. It had no there was no notes. It was just different noise. That's what it sounded like. It was weird. But that's how the people look at things today, because they have abandoned God. They have abandoned the perspective of modern science. Look at it this way. In modern science, we saw that God was rational. Postmodern says, yeah, the issue of God, that's irrational. I can't accept that. Modern science sees a creation which is rational and orderly, which we can study and then draw certain conclusions. Postmodern looks at as the cosmos as being a bunch of chaos. Why bother studying it? If there has meaning in modern science, there's meaninglessness in postmodern science in our world today. Some people in the postmodern world want to take us back. They want to blame our advances in science on us, on the Christian and the Western world. And they want to tell us we can't have the air conditioning going anymore. We can't drive certain cars because it's causing a damage to the environment. Right? So they want to reverse all the advances in modern world. Our conclusion then is we must never think, as Francis Schaeffer says, that the Christian base hindered science, but rather the Christian base made modern science possible. Now let's look at Christianity's impact on education. Christianity, first of all, had Jewish roots. We see in Deuteronomy chapter 6:6-7, Moses, after he gives the command, the great commandment, to love the Lord your God with all our heart, soul, and mind, said this, "And these words which I commanded you today," that very command, "shall be in your heart. You shall then teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk to them when they sit in your house, when you walk on the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." Jewish believer in the Old Testament was to teach his children continuously about the commandments and about God and the world. Christianity had Christian roots. This verse, which I referred to even last week, Jesus, who was what? The rabbi. The rabbi is the teacher. Okay? He said to the Jews who believed in him, "If you abide in my word, you will be my disciples," which is what? A student. "And indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." So, teachers, students, Christianity is based in teaching. From the beginning, a religion of the Bible has gone hand in hand with teaching. Christianity is par excellence of a teaching religion, and the story of growth is largely the educational one. And as Christianity spreads, patterns of more formal education developed. Education, first of all, let's look in the Middle Ages. When most people were illiterate, Christian monks kept learning alive in the monasteries. They painstakingly hand-copied many of the classics from antiquity, both Christian and secular. They copied the Bible, they copied early Christian fathers, they copied even some of the Roman history. Much of ancient history would have been unknown to us, but for the very fact that they had copied many of those earlier writings. Codifying language. Many of the world's languages were set to writing by Christian missionaries in order for people to read the Bible. The printing press. John Gutenberg's printing press made mass production of books possible. A Christian, he said, "I know what I want to do. I wish to publish the Bible," with his new invention. Or he invented it for the very purpose of printing the Bible, which he did in German at first. Christianity gave rise to education for everyone, not just an elite few. Early attempts of education, there was a sporadic attempts in the mass education. First was by Emperor Charlemagne, who hired his tutor to provide education for the people of the Holy Roman Empire in the 9th century. But it kind of phased out after he died off. During the Reformation, the roots of education of the masses goes back to the Reformation, especially John Calvin and his Institutes of Christian Religion. Now, some people think, well, when you think about John Calvin, oh, it's all about election, predestination, all that. But he has a very thick book, about this thick. Okay, I think Rev has one in the back, an office, so maybe. And only about maybe this much part is about creation or about election predestination. Right? Well, the other one has to do with all sorts of other Christian doctrines and teachings and so forth, which most of us would probably adhere to. Right? So he was the first one to systematize theology. He was the pioneer. Before that, the only person had done that before that goes all the way back to Augustine. So there was Augustine, then there was John Calvin. You know, whether you agree with what he has to say, he pioneered in education. And it was believed that the Reformers' battle with the Catholic Church was going to survive and succeed and flourish. Widespread biblical literacy at all levels of society was necessary. See Martin Luther there pounding the nail of the 95 Theses on the door of Wittenberg. All right. You know what's coming up next year in 2017? That's the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther doing that. So it's the beginning of the Reformation. So maybe we should have some big party for that, maybe. All right. In Geneva, where Calvin was, he promoted education for everyone and became a pattern throughout the world. The Scotsman John Knox came all the way from Scotland, visited Geneva, and then brought that legacy of public education back with him. And then later, the Pilgrims or the Puritans carried it on into America. Education for the Puritans was a high priority. In 1642, they passed a law requiring education for all children, and the law called the Old Deluder Act, establishing public education so the children would know the scriptures for themselves. Higher education, the university, has its roots in Christian faith. The greatest universities worldwide were started by Christians for Christian purposes. The Christian faith gave rise to higher education. The universities were the creation of the late Middle Ages. There were only three of them. The prototypes were Oxford, Paris, and Bologna. By definition, the origin of the university is in the Christian West, and its chief study is Christian theology. In America, almost every one of the first 123 colleges and universities in America has Christian origins. They were started by Christians for Christians. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Dartmouth, Columbia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the Ivy League schools that we think of today. What happened then? What happened to education in the country? Well, there became state-controlled public education. In 1837, Horace Mann, a Unitarian, began an effort to deliver children from the Christian religion. Let me read what else he says here in James Kennedy's book on page 53. Yeah, Mann was the president of the Massachusetts legislature and chairman of the new State Board of Education's America's first public school system. He was a Unitarian who denied the Trinity and the deity of Christ. He did not believe in the inspiration and authority of the Bible. The fact that the entire education system for all children in America at the time was in the hands of the Christian church, and to him this was deplorable. He thought something must be done to remedy this situation. His answer was state education run, operated, and controlled by the state, today by the unions. Hence, the modern public education system was begun in an effort to deliver children from the Christian religion. There was a name, John Dewey. He was the first president of the American Humanist Association, and his progressive education became dominant in America. Dewey felt that Christianity was the principal problem needed to be solved in our public education system. So he worked to help establish state-controlled education. Literacy rates. While more than 200 years of Christian public education in America produced 99% or nearly 99% literacy rate. State-controlled secularized education succeeded in increasing the illiteracy rate by 32 times, with now more than 40 million illiterates, or people that are, can't even read the diploma that they may have gotten. Education worldwide. It has been primarily Christian missionaries who have educated countless of millions in the third world, establishing schools, converting unwritten languages to writing, and teaching the three R's. So we've seen that modern advances in science and education is a direct result of Christianity's impact in the world.